Hello and welcome to Matchsticks and Microphones for the week of May 3rd, 2011. I'm your host, Justin Azevedo, on Twitter at AzevedoJ, who's with me this evening.
Robert Cleave from Flames Nation, RM Cleave on Twitter.
Kent Wilson from Flames Nation as well, Kent underscore Wilson at Twitter.
And Haley from Matchsticks and Gasoline, MG underscore Haley on Twitter.
So I've taken the liberty of dubbing this episode the Please Don't Fuck It Up Feaster any more than it already has been episode. We're going to be talking about the offseason and just things that we would like to see the Flames do, or things that we expect the Flames to do. And I think we can start off with that topic, is that I'm pretty sure it's a foregone conclusion now that Feaster will eventually be hired as the GM of the Flames full-time, taking the acting tag off the general manager role. Quick thoughts about that, I guess.
Well, actually, Bob and I were discussing it today, and we still not sure that it's a foregone conclusion. Right, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, Kent and I were kind of going back and forth on this, and I just, if they wanted it to be general manager, they could have done it already. There's nothing that's been stopping them for all this yap about internal review and all of that stuff. He's been in place on his own since December 28th. They've had plenty of time to assess whether they want to have him on the job. Season's been over for 3-4 weeks. If they wanted him in the job already, if it was just some slam dunk, wouldn't you think it'd be done? There's nothing that really has been holding them back. That's what makes me suspicious.
Nothing except for maybe them wanting to interview someone else and waiting for that person to be available for an interview.
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm getting at. I mean, if it was a done deal that he was just going to get the job, do it already. I mean, you have to get on with business, obviously. And they do have, you know, a coach to find for the AHL team probably, and you know, at least one other, two other assistants. I don't see what the big holdup is, unless you've got other plans outside the organization. That's what Kent and I were going back and forth on today, and that's maybe what's kind of got my antenna up, the fact that they just haven't done it and we're already in May.
So a couple of thoughts on that quickly. Just the first thing is that I find it odd that they would be conducting personnel changes in terms of the assistant coaches without having a GM already in place, or somebody that, you know, wouldn't want to bring his own guy in. You see that the main argument being floated around for the fact that Cookson, McLennan, and McGill were let go is that Daryl might have pushed these guys onto Brent, and Brent wanted a chance to, you know, have his own regime in the coaching booth. So what happens if they hire a GM that doesn't necessarily agree with Brent? Then all that kind of just dissipates, and then it was unnecessary to start with.
Thing is, those guys were probably dead men walking anyway. Whether it was Feaster doing it or whether it's someone else, if those guys are really Daryl's guys, no matter what, they were done.
Yeah.
I mean, Brent coaching, someone else coaching, like a new GM comes in, theoretically, he could cut Brent loose. So I don't know. I mean, those guys were periphery figures, and I think they were done no matter what. Like I said, I'm just surprised, because if it was really going to be Feaster, there was nothing stopping them from doing this 10 days ago.
I guess the only thing is, yeah, he has to be the one making these decisions not to renew these guys' contract, right? Like, so why would he be
making... Does he? Or does Ken King have that decision-making power?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, but if Ken King's the one that's making those decisions, does that not kind of speak to the inherent problems in the organization? Well, I guess that's right. Nobody's ever claimed that the Flames are actually a good model in terms of organizational stability. I don't know. It seems to me that Ken King is more of a business guy, and he would not want to have his fingers in something this deep in hockey ops.
I mean, Feaster, I think, is going to stay in the organization. I mean, it could be that he's the guy and they're delaying for some unknown, unbaffling reason. But even if he isn't the coming GM, I'm pretty sure Feaster is going to be in the organization anyway. So it's possible that the owners and everyone else, all the uppers, are okay with him making, you know, decisions about firing periphery guys who probably weren't going to be hired anyway, right, on the say-so of Brent Sutter. So I guess we'll see if they start hiring people under Feaster's reign here. That'll be more substantial than just cutting guys loose, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I actually agree with that, because, yeah, I think Feaster is going to stick around in some sort of business-oriented part of the team. He might not be the GM, but if he's the assistant GM who happens to be kind of doing a lot of the cap stuff, a lot of the other financial issues, that wouldn't surprise me. I always had the sense that was more what he was leaning towards anyway, especially if they're going to get a GM who ends up being really strong on the amateur procurement side.
Reading about the stuff that Ken King said at the annual
season ticket holder luncheon,
that apparently Conroy is now interested in doing some scouting stuff. So see how that goes, I guess.
So how much faith do you put into what Eric Francis said last week, just stating, you know, on HNIC that everything that he's heard from the organization, his contacts in the organization have said that the Flames haven't talked to anybody regarding the GM job yet?
Well, I figure that could be true, but they might just be waiting for someone else to be available. You know what I mean? Maybe. They're not going to talk to someone, I guess I'm saying.
Right. I think Eric took a piece of information. They weren't talking to anybody. That's probably true. Exactly what Kent said. But that doesn't automatically mean that he's the guy that's going to get the job. And I think that's maybe where he drew an inference that was maybe not necessarily completely supported by the facts. Not that that would be the first time that that's happened, but...
We are talking about Eric Francis here. But is there a precedent for that kind of behavior? Like, I just assume that, you know, teams were able to talk to other management people in other teams in terms of positioning or positions, regardless if the team was actually active or not.
You know, for an acting GM, maybe, although, I mean, I'm just going to throw a name out. If they're really looking at, if anybody's looking at Paul Fenton, he's in Europe right now. He's the associate GM for Team USA. So he's a little busy right until mid-May, right? I mean, they have a kind of a funny structure in USA Hockey. They have all these NHL GMs basically as their advisory board. And then he's kind of doing the day-to-day grunt work as the associate GM. So if anyone's looking at him or Nonis, you know, in Canada, to give him a real job, same deal, right? He's Team Canada's GM. It's the same sort of thing. Those guys are busy until mid-May. There's nothing going to be done.
Makes sense. So what do you think the likelihood of Feaster being the GM, just percentage-wise, just off the top of your head, come July 1st is?
I'm gonna go with a coin flip.
50-50?
50-50.
Yeah. Robert?
Yeah, I have no argument with that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's still pretty unclear. So sounds about right.
I'm going to go a little bit higher than you guys, just to be contrarian, I guess. I bet I was going to go 65 to 70%. I don't know, just things that I'm seeing and reading. Logically, to me, it would make sense that he would be sticking around. And I mean, he has said in many interviews, I think three or four that I can remember, that regardless if he actually gets the GM job or not, and you guys were talking this earlier, he would like to stay with the franchise. So he will be sticking around regardless if his title is GM or not past this summer. So if we just move on and, I don't know, let's just say that Feaster is eventually hired as the GM, which I don't think any of us actually want, coming up to the draft and in between the point where the Stanley Cup is awarded and the 24th of June, would you like to see major moves performed by Feaster during that time? You know, players moved for draft picks or actual prospects, like large-scale players like a Jerome McGill or a Mika Kiprusoff or a Robin Regier.
Robert's going to echo me on this, that if they're going to move a big ticket, it should be Kiprusoff. It just should be. He hasn't been that good for years. He's had one good season over the last four. He's older. He's one of the most expensive goalies in the league, and we all know that the goaltender market is always saturated. You can find good deals there. I mean, if they're going to move a big ticket, and they won't do this, but they should move Kiprusoff.
Yeah, that's pretty much a slam dunk. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's in the top, he's like sixth highest paid goalie in the league. It's pretty tough to justify that sort of ticket for the performance we've seen other than not 09-10. You can't do it. Beyond that, if they were going to move somebody, I suspect it would be, it might be Regier or Bork, but no, I mean, they should move Kiprusoff. That's not even a question. I mean, if Philly loses a couple of more games and Paul Holmgren loses his mind, that should be the first guy, whoever it is. I don't care if it's Feaster or whoever. That's the first guy they should call. And the second guy they'd probably want to call is George McPhee.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's really in the market for a veteran overpaid goaltender, then by all means, take advantage of the market, man.
I think any moves that are made would probably wait until the draft at least, because, you know, it's just a prime opportunity. You have all the teams, all the GMs congregated together. It's easy to make deals, you know, everyone's there to talk to.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. Nothing will happen until about the 23rd or 24th at the soonest. When's the awards of the 22nd?
Yeah.
And then they all go to Minneapolis. Thursday's the 23rd, I think. So anything that happens before that, I mean, it's just not. There's nothing will happen until then. I mean, I know that you can start buying guys out on the 15th, but no, I mean, I don't think any significant movement will happen league-wide until after the awards dinner and they all get in Minnesota.
So what is the perception of Kiprusoff around the league right now? Because I for whatever reason, I still seem to think that it is quite high. He is this, you know, Vezina winning goaltender that should command a lot on the trade market, regardless of it, or, you know, besides the fact that his salary is massive, his cap hit is massive. His contract is structured in a way that is, you know, kind of cap friendly in terms of buyouts towards the later years of his career. So do you think that there actually would be a market and attractive trade possibilities for the Flames if that was a if that was something brought up by the GM?
I mean, we can't really speak to what GMs think, but, you know, whenever I hear the media call into, you know, local radio, there's always a caveat applied to when they're talking about Kiprusoff. You know, they still say, you know, Kiprusoff's one of the best in the league. He's still a very quality goaltender. So, I mean, if the opinion in the offices around the NHL mirrors the opinion of the media, then yeah, there's still a lot of people who think he's a top end goaltender. And if that's true, the Flames should really take advantage of that.
I think a lot of like teams that would have the money to go for it and that have like a good enough team to play in front of him would go for it. Yeah. I mean, why not?
Yeah, no, Haley's right. You have no team's going to look at him unless they think they're on the cusp of something. And he's not going to waive his no movement unless he's going to a team on the cusp of something. He's not going to waive to go to Florida. And he'd be right, obviously. So that would, I mean, you can't blame him for that. You'd never begrudge it. So to me, like I said, Philly, Washington, those kind of look like the teams that, have the combination of wherewithal financially to spend money and general managers that might be in a tenuous enough situation, not necessarily getting fired, but a lot of pressure from ownership to win. And that's the sort of move you make when you're in a panic. And if somebody's panicking, like I said, then let them panic. Calgary's not winning the Stanley Cup next year, no matter who's in that. So
the thing you bring up with the no trade clause and with him waiving it to go to a quality team is that most of the quality teams around the league are pretty close to the cap, so the Flames would probably have to accept salary back.
Yeah.
And with a team like the Flames having the cap structure and the cap situation they do, is that an acceptable loss, being able to take salary back like that?
If you don't care if you're going to win next year or not, then that's fine, because you're trying to set something up for the long term, right? Philly's toast next year. Like, they've got nothing. They've got no room next year. The Capitals might have some room. It's hard to say, but it's a long way between now and June 30th. Teams can unload salary all over the place in the summer. They can go over for a bit. There's a lot of things. I mean, this is a point I've made too many times. If you really want to blow your team up and fix it, it happens in the summer when everybody has sort of maximum flexibility in terms of draft picks, lack of commitment before July 1st in terms of money. That's your time to make moves. Teams feel like they can do stuff then and not really suffer, and you don't lose anything competitively in terms of making trades, right? Not like at the deadline where you don't want to trade a good player, even if you kind of need to make a move.
It depends on what kind of contract you're getting back, too. I mean, you don't want to – the reason to trade Kiprusoff is partially to get rid of a inefficient contract. So, I mean, you could probably take back Chris Versteeg from Philadelphia, for instance. He's $3 million. He's probably not worth that contract. He's not a terrible player. He's just – I don't know if I could consider him a $3 million player. But you're also going to want to get other value out of it, some sort of futures, first-round draft pick if you can, some sort of prospect. I don't know if Philadelphia has any prospects worth a damn that aren't playing on the team right now, but that's just an example.
Well, and the big thing is, too, you want shorter contracts coming back no matter what, because something's got to give. And I know that the Flames are unloading a lot of guys after next season in terms of their cap structure. If they got another contract that did exactly that, then that would just kind of add into the flexibility coming out in 12-13 or whenever the lockout ends, when the next CBA doesn't get done, or you know what I mean? Because that's kind of a big year, right? We're at the end of a CBA. So if they knocked 2 years off of that and took some money back on a short-term basis, I'm kind of thinking, you know, if next year's kind of a semi-write-off, you know, that's one way to do it. And if you get, I mean, Versteeg's not a bad player. Kent's right. He's not a $3 million player, but he's also 25 years old and he can play a little bit. So it's, you know, it's a move of that ilk.
If you are going for the rebuild or retool, whatever you want to call it, then taking back any long-term contract is going to be very counterproductive. So they don't want to.
Unless the guy's young. That. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you spoke quickly about prospects and moving on to the 23rd, that weekend and the draft. I know this is kind of just a throw out there question, but is there somebody that you would like to see the Flames target during that first round with the 13th overall pick, yeah. And you know, guys that maybe haven't looked at this quite closely enough yet, but somebody that it piques your interest at that will be around at that time.
Yeah, I can't really speak intelligently about that yet. I do most of my prospect work after I get all the postmortems done, so I haven't really looked too closely at who's coming up. So, Bob, have you looked at any of the prospects?
The only guy that I think they've kind of, I mean, maybe I've just kind of looked is maybe Mark McNeil from PA. Mm-hmm. You know, big center. 6'2", north of 200 pounds already. His birthday isn't too bad. He's a 93 birthday, so he's not one of these late 92 kids that got a jump.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, maybe. But
yeah,
just you don't know, right? I mean, the one thing is when you're sitting in the middle of the draft and then you have maybe, well, we saw it last year with Cam Fowler. It just takes one guy to slide, and then you just blow the whole thing up. And then, you know, and the only guy, though, that's really kind of famous that might have that sort of aura about them is Couturier, and he's not dropping at 13.
No, no.
So unless Calgary trades up, and they don't really have much to do that with, I mean, they'll get a middling sort of player. I mean, unless there's a bigger deal, right? Unless we have some sort of big blow-up explosion where players and picks are going all over the place. But absent that, I mean, I don't see them doing much. So like I said, he was the only kind of name that I'd sort of looked at. But in any serious way, no, they're – nah. I don't think they may – no, but I doubt it.
Yeah,
I haven't really started looking at draft prospects at all yet either. I usually, I don't know, I guess kind of wait until the beginning of June for that. But
Robert, you mentioned McNeil, and I mean, he does fit that prototypical WHL centerman that I'm sure that even though Darryl is gone, the Flames still like to draft guys like that. You know,
they're a little small down the middle. Oh. I mean, other than Jokinen. I mean, you have to be honest about this. If you look at their, you know, Stajan, if he sticks around, he's not a big guy. He's not very physical. Backlund, well, I know. You know what I mean, though? He's got a contract, right?
Yeah.
Backlund is not a big guy that's going to run through people. The only guy who looked like a kind of worthwhile center prospect in junior going into the AHL last year was Wall, obviously, had a lost year, but he's not a big guy. Max Reinhardt's not going to run people off the end of the planet. At some point, they're probably going to, whether it's a good move or not, they're probably going to draft for some size. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I kind of look at him. But, I mean, he kind of fits the profile. If you look where teams have him picked, you know, where the scouting services have him, they've got him in that kind of 15 to 25 range. So, and he's a center. Like I said, he's a center with some size. And, beyond that, who knows? But like I said, any number of things could happen. And if you get a new GM that isn't allergic to certain parts of Europe and certain other sorts of places. Well, no, really, but this is an issue, right?
No, it's true. Yeah,
absolutely. So I'm just going to check a name out there. Mika Zibanejad from the SEL. He's a 6'3 mm-hmm. centerman, kind of wiry at this point, but he just turned 18.
April 18th.
A guy like that. And I mean, there is a kind of a precedent with drafting Swedish guys like Mikael Backlund, who are, you know, take a little while to develop. They would allow it, if they were to draft somebody like that and allow him a career path like a Mikael Backlund or like a Tim Erickson, spend some time in the SEL and then come over here, maybe adjust for half a year or whatever in the Dub or in the AHL, and then pull him up into the system. I think by that time his frame could have probably filled out, and he does project to be a pretty pretty tough, I guess, minute center, like kind of like a Lankow, maybe a couple more points per year at this point.
But if he made it to 13, I think they'd take him.
Yeah, so I think That's just the name I'm throwing out there right now. Like you said, he has been rising up on some draft boards, but there have been some drafts and stuff that I've seen going on the internet where he hasn't quite gone up that far. So yeah, if he's at 13, I think if he's still there at when we hit 13, I think that should be the guy that the Flames are taking. But if anybody else has anything to add on that, I guess just quickly.
That sounds like a good pick. I mean, the Flames have had some recent success coming out of Sweden, picking out of Sweden. So I can definitely see them targeting him for sure.
Well, yeah, and they picked. I mean, really, if you look at their first rounders from Sweden, those two guys have pretty clearly, I mean, in Backlund's case, he's more or less matching his draft position. He's doing all right. And if Eriksson turns out even half as good as he's starting to look, picking him in the 20s is going to look pretty sharp.
So we'll move on to the beginning of July. And I think we all agree that this is probably more of a kind of sit back year for the Flames in terms of free agents. But looking at the upcoming UFAs and RFAs this year on July 1st, the RFAs obviously are kind of a pipe dream just based on the fact that there aren't a lot, the Flames don't have a lot of draft picks to be compensating teams for, and the cap space obviously is an issue. But in terms of UFAs, are there guys that have piqued your interest just taking a quick cursory browsing glance at the list?
That's tough. It's a pretty thin field this
pretty
year.
Scroungy list, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would like to look for some value guys, especially if someone like Glenn Cross leaves. I'd like them to look at maybe Joel Ward if the Predators let him go. He's been playing really tough minutes. Higgins, yeah, for him. Like those type of guys, I'd like, you know, guys who don't have the big counting numbers you're going to have to pay for, but guys who have played, you know, in tough minutes and have pretty good possession numbers. I'd like them to look for value there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's most important that they kind of take care of business at home first. Yeah, obviously a guy like Alex Tanguay, they want to retain, and maybe, you know, Babchuk or Carlson, etc. You know, you're going to have to let some of those guys go, but you want to try and take care of business here first.
Yeah, I mean, the two priority guys are probably in order, Tanguay and then Glenn Cross. To me, I mean, everyone else is just kind of a guy. I mean, Carlson, if they get him for peanuts, I guess that's fine. Babchuk, that's a zero priority move for me at this point.
Especially because you got a guy like TJ Brody who's coming up in the system and has that same offensive upside as, I mean, obviously maybe not hard of a shot as Babchuk, but he still has that offensive upside and can play that number five role, probably just as capable as Babchuk can, and, you know, they actually get some development time with Brody up there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, another guy I think the Flames should look at, and they probably won't, is Nikolai Zhertov, who is, you know, reviled around the league pretty consistently, but every time I look at his underlying numbers, they're always good. So I don't know if he's a jerk in the dressing room or what his issue is, but I mean, he had the best underlying numbers, some of the best underlying numbers on the Flyers this year.
If he wants to stay in North America, he will.
And that is a very good point. The KHL offers probably a pretty attractive option for him.
Right.
Just like looking at precedent with guys like Radulov going over there, maybe not being able to get the kind of money that he wants over here. And
that's funny with Radulov. Yeah. You know, if he'd stuck it out for 1 year, Nashville either would have had to pay him through the nose, or they would have had to let him go on an offer sheet or trade him, and he would have got his money.
Yeah.
I just always have the sense that he just won't. Wanted to go. Zhirinov, I don't know. I mean, he went there for a year because nobody would look at him after he left the Rangers, and then he came back for $2 million, and he's 26. I kind of thought he would have got that sort of money back over there. So you just never know, right? Like some players, you just don't know what their situation is, right? I mean, and sometimes Russians get stiffed. I mean, there's no way Max Afinogenov should have got basically no offers from the NHL last summer. He had a pretty good year 2 years ago in Atlanta. He should have got something, and basically nobody would talk to him.
Just because there's this stigma associated with Russian players and the fact that they have this option, everybody just kind of assumes that they'd rather go back than be underpaid in the NHL.
Well, I was going to say that, I mean, I bet you Afinogenov is at least as good as Todd Bertuzzi. Bertuzzi has a job all the time, but Afinogenov didn't even get a sniff.
No, and that's, like I said, that's always been the thing with Russians. You know, as soon as something bad happens, well, they're bad guys. Well, I mean, we've seen this before. There's language issues. There's all kinds of stuff that happens in work environments that we're all aware of. And sometimes those guys just kind of get it. And maybe some of them are jerks. There's no, we don't know, right? I mean, that's the one thing. When you're not sitting in a room, you got no way of knowing. So, but I mean, if he's a decent human being, there's no there shouldn't be any team holding back. And if a team wants a top sixer for less than $3 million that might live up to that contract, that you could do worse. Because somebody's going to overpay for one of those old guys that's making a pile of money right now, like Corey Stillman, right? Somebody's going to give him a big bunch of money, just like they did with Rolston. And Rolston kind of had a bounce back at the end of the year. But you know what I mean in that, right? They're going to overpay some older guy, give him $3-4 million. And a year from now, he's going to be, you know, spending more time in rehab than he is on the ice.
Brendan Morrison, maybe.
Yeah.
Well,
Brendan Morrison.
Well, no, if you can get a guy for $725,000, now that's another deal.
Yeah.
But,
so just taking a quick look through the Flames UFA list, I just want a quick yes or no from everybody in terms of signing. So we'll start off with Tanguay. I think that's obviously probably a yes from everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Glenn Cross, personally for me, I think he's going to be demanding too much money, so I'm going to say no on him.
If you can get him for a decent amount, obviously. Yes, he's a great guy to have around, a good player, but if not, then you have to let him walk.
Right. Yeah, I say yes within reason, right? Mm-hmm. If he wants $3.5 million or $4 million, you have to let him go. But
yeah, you have to set a target at some point for these guys and say, where's my line in the sand? And if his number is $3.5 or $4 million, I wish him well.
I think anything past $3 million for sure is just a goodbye. I mean,
yeah.
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 I,
so Glenn Cross, obviously just based on the contract, that's kind of split.
I'd say the same thing with Tange, though. Although he's sounds more amenable to taking less, but it's no different. If Alex Tange walks in and says, I want $4 or $4.5 million, based on his boxcars, he can probably get it somewhere. He can get four, probably. And that's, again, that's tough for Calgary. Unless, I mean, all we're talking about is just speculation anyway, because the other thing we don't know is, you know, are they going to be able to unload some bodies to clear some room?
So moving on, Frederick Modine. That's probably a no from everybody. No. Yeah, resounding no.
No, not for free. Not if you paid.
No.
Brendan Morrison at $725,000 this year, I think at a comparable salary, if there's space for him, I would think that at the very least, bring him out for a tryout on a tryout contract. And if he can prove that he is more talented or, you know, better suited to them, better suited to the team than other people in camp, sign him for a contract, you know, around the same way or around the same cost. But if just based on his injury this year and his advanced age, I don't foresee that happening.
Not if Lenko's healthy. I just don't see it, because they're going to have four guys at center anyway, unless they move Stajan or over the summer. They're not moving Jokinen, and that's not going to happen.
No.
But if they've got Stajan, then maybe he might be a late summer guy if you thought his knee was good. But it's a lot of ifs, right? That means probably not.
You know, keep him if you can get him at minimum wage as a 13th forward. But beyond that, you know, I looked at his scoring chance numbers recently, and I posted them on Flames Nation just today, and they're underwhelming. His possession numbers are underwhelming. He rode the percentages pretty hard this year, and he had some pucks go in when he was on the power play. So his counting stats and the fact that he sort of played a stopgap on the top line are augmenting his real abilities. So I would not put any sort of much interest in him at all beyond, you know, 500K.
Yeah, if you can give him a Conroy type deal like he had the last year of his tenure with the Flames, and that would be fine.
Yep.
Steve Steos, I'm going to say obviously a no from everybody probably as well.
Well, Steos is available.
No.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, unless they got a cap credit for signing him, I would think so.
Sorry, Steve. I know it's painful for us to say, but you're out.
Good guy, I'm sure.
Excellent leader.
Just no.
Excellent leader. But yeah, 38 years old and not exactly good at hockey anymore. So, not a guy that you probably
He was
be
better than
around.
Brendan Mickelson. I'll give him that much.
And that is a guy that's second next on the list, I guess, after Anton Babchuk at $1.4 million this year. I think anything more than that, again, is no. Just based on his boxcars, he probably will be able to get more than that from another team. But his defensive play was terrible the entire year. And there were so many mistakes I could just pick up by just watching, like, let alone look at the underlying numbers for him this season.
Yeah, a great power play guy. Other than that, not too much upside. So
no, cut him loose.
Babchuk, sort of whoever's in the big chair when July rolls around, that's Babchuk's going to be sort of the test for the new GM, I think, for the Flames. I mean, if he comes out and he pays Babchuk, he doubles his salary or something to keep him around, then we know we have someone who doesn't really know what they're doing in the big chair again. But if he lets him walk, or if he resigns him for relatively cheap somehow, then cool.
I think he's clogging up a spot at a point where you're just, he's plateaued as a hockey player. He's 26, 27 years old. He's never getting better or faster. I don't, honestly, even for cheap, unless he was like seventh defenseman money, I just, something about it just tells me don't do it. Like, move on.
Yeah, fair enough.
So you mentioned the plateau, and our next guy, Adam Party, 27 this year, made $700,000. Yep. Is injured a ton of the time. Is it time to let go of him too? I think personally, I would say no. Go, good luck, Adam. Thanks for your years of service, but we're moving on.
For me personally, I mean, if you can keep Party for, you know, 700K, he may be a guy you could keep around, because you're not going to want to fill the entire back end with rookies next year, right? And I mean, he's a guy who can play fifth, sixth, seventh defenseman. You don't have to pay him a lot, and he always has very good underlying numbers. I mean, he's sheltered a bunch, of course, but I mean, he's not a detriment in that role, and he's not going to be very expensive. So I think, I mean, if they let Adam Party walk, they're probably going to have to re-sign another veteran anyway, because Steos will be going, we assume Babchuk will be going, and Party will be going. Someone has to be re-signed there, so they're going to have to replace him, and at that price range, it's going to be tough, quite frankly.
Yeah, I'd have a lot less problem keeping Adam Party around for 700 grand, because he's never going to ask for more. I mean, Kent made a good point there. Yeah, he gets sheltered, but when he's out there, he's productive in that sort of role. He makes something of his time. And I think, you know, for the money he's going to want, that offends me a lot less than paying Anton Babchuk $1.8 million or 2.2 or something of that ilk to basically get a little bit of power play in the same sort of EV production. I mean, he'd be a seventh defenseman. He won't hurt you. And that's that's fine.
For me, it's those four words that you just said, though, when he's out there. And for the past 2 or 3 years, it does not seem like he has been able to actually physically be able to, you know, stay healthy and actually contribute productively over the course of a season. And I understand that, you know, there is extra costs associated with getting a veteran guy on the UFA market as opposed to resetting somebody like Party. But if you're going to get somebody that may be a little bit more reliable in terms of injury risk, I might pay the extra $300,000 for that just to know that he won't be on LTIR the entire time that he has signed his contract for, therefore, you know, negating the signing in the first place and still having to bring somebody up.
Yeah. If you've looked at the bottom of that free agent market for defensemen, it's pretty ugly. You might be lucky if you got a player as good as Adam Party for $1 million, and that's not meant to be praiseworthy to him.
Yeah, it's a tough call, especially when you...
Yeah, you play the market, right? I mean, I'm not going to run out on July 1st and give him, you know, a 3-year deal or anything.
No. There's still Brendan Mickelson or Brett Carson who are, I don't know, similar-ish to Party in terms of skill level. Maybe not Brendan Mickelson. Yeah, I don't know. They're probably going to be making the same amount of money, so I guess you have a decision to make there.
And Mickelson's the next guy on the list on a RFA contract. So whether we like it or not, he probably will be re-signed.
Yeah, the team's just going to let him walk.
Really?
Oh, no, they're not going to sign him. They have no use for him at all.
You know what? One of him or Pelech is not going to get a qualifying offer.
I would say probably Pelech. I think that the team...
Maybe both.
Mm-hmm. I think both. Neither of them is going to get a qualifying offer.
I mean, I'd be fine with that, but I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, just get the impression that they would give him a qualifying offer, let Pelech walk, and then if, in terms of AHL personnel, they'd just send him down to the AHL, be a top-line guy up there. That's just the impression that I mean, I can be completely wrong for sure, but like I said, that's just the impression I get, but I don't think I would want him re-signed.
I mean, it depends what you re-sign him for. If you re-sign him as AHL fodder, that's fine. They need somebody to play that spot for him.
And then Brett Carson... making a league minimum contract and a UFA this year. Obviously, the sample size on what we saw of him was very, 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 very limited, but he was the entire time. So I don't
especially
know.
Noticeable. A versatile guy, I guess, to his credit, who can play forward. So I don't know, whatever that means.
I don't know. I mean, if you get him for the same $500,000, and if he's your seventh or maybe eighth defenseman, if he's the guy on the block that might go to Abbotsford if one of your young guys steps up, or if you get a better kind of veteran free agent. I said you got to have some guys making around the minimum, probably about 8 NHL defensemen that can play.
Yeah.
If he's your eighth guy making $560,000, I don't know. He's a decent skater. He's certainly more mobile than almost any of the other stiffs they had back there. it wouldn't hurt my feelings, but if there's someone else better, you know, you're not really going to sink a lot of money into the guy. He's 25 and kind of know what he's going to be.
Yeah. So then on to our last guy, Henrik Karlsson, and this might be a little bit tougher just based on, you know, how people perceive Irving's performance in Abbotsford this year, and if Karlsson will even want to stick around here at the price that the Flames would maybe available to pay him at $500,000 or $600,000. I think that he is a better option at this point than Leland Irving, even at $700,000. So I would try to keep him, but maybe you guys think differently.
Well, I mean, with Irving, if they really consider him the goalie of the future, like personally, I've been underwhelmed by Irving's results even this year. His supposed best year in the league, he was a 912 save percentage goaltender, which doesn't strike me as a NHL starter. But assuming that they think he's a future starter, that it doesn't do him any good to come up here and again, assuming Kiprusoff's still with the team and play, you know, 10 games or 15 games behind Kiprusoff and sit on the bench all year. So you might as well resign Karlsson to do that.
Yeah, if I can quote our occasional commenter, Resolute, there's exactly one goaltending development job in every organization, and that's AHL starter. You know, if you think Leland Irving's your guy,
keep him there.
You may as well leave him in the A. Karlsson sits here and he plays caddy. But again, depends who your number one goalie is, right? If it's if they do make a move for somebody else who happens to be cheaper, there might be more money for a backup. But if it's Kipper, no, your max dollars are about $750,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if Kiprusoff continues his downward trend next year, which is probably to be expected, then Karlsson could get more playing time. You know, so if you sign him to a cheap contract, then you could get some pretty decent value out of it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Moving on after the UFAs and after all that stuff is obviously the camp. And just taking a cursory look at the Flames prospects this year, not exactly a large group that are NHL ready. I think actually probably just two between TJ Brody and Tim Erickson. Would you guys like to see one or both of those guys on the team? Because I think one is probably inevitable just based on the contract situations the Flames have right now and you know, actually having to pay for guys. They might be out of their price range. So if... Which one would you rather have on the team, and would you rather actually see both of them, I guess is what I'm asking.
That's, I mean, it's hard to say now. Erickson has been playing against men as a teenager for a while in the Swedish Elite League, but who knows what he's going to look like on North American ice against NHLers. I mean, he could come over, and it could be a smooth transition, and, I mean, you just got to go by merit. I mean, I really like TJ, what I saw from TJ Brody last year. I thought he probably could have stuck with the team. Maybe not. You can never tell from a couple games, but, I mean, I would definitely have to see them first, see how they play, see how they react to play before I can say one or both should be on the team.
I just have a feeling one of them's probably going to make it. You know, I mean, the thing with Brody, there's no hurry. I mean, Brody's only starting the second year of his ELC. He's got 2 years left. Erickson's got 3 years left. If one of those guys plays and the other one ends up being the number one defenseman in Abbotsford next year, I don't think there's any harm. Like I said, I think 12-13 is where the rubber hits the road for the Flames anyway. So, but I think one of them will play. And if they're both good in camp and, you know, you can go with both of them, that's fine. I mean, obviously the upside on both of them is pretty high, but young defensemen, I don't know. Progress is not linear with those guys. And presuming it's going to work for a 21-year-old and a 20-year-old.
At the same time, yeah.
Yeah, you're asking for it. It might work. They might be talented enough where it happens, but just penciling them in right now, no, not for me. No more than one. And you better have some backup. You better have a pretty decent seventh defenseman.
Yeah. I mean, as you guys are saying, if next year is basically a write-off, then I don't see why not, you know, and having at least one or both of them on the roster. But
well, I think it is, but I'm not sure that the team does, because, I mean, if you take Feaster at his word as having some sort of insight to the ownership, he said they're going to be a cap team next year. Well, you're no point being a cap team if you think you're going to suck, even if it does happen. I mean, it's not like he can't be a cap team and be terrible Edmonton was 2 years ago.
Possible.
Dirty Edmonton.
I just had to get that in there. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's get around it. That's completely fine. Nobody likes
Never
Edmonton.
Never object to Oilers' jobs. Yeah, I mean, young defensemen do struggle. You look at someone like Luke Shen or something, for example. It happens. So if it is a write-off next year and they are going to finish in the bottom half of the conference again, then it won't be as big of a deal. But if they are planning on being a cap team and, you know, trying to make the postseason, then you definitely want to have some backup there.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't mean they won't be both playing by the end of the year, because even if one makes it and one doesn't, who says the Flames aren't going to unload every UFA to B they can dump next spring at the trade deadline? They've got a few, right? And Corey Sarich could definitely be one of those players. Who says I hope he's gone before then, obviously. But I hope he's gone before then. But that said, if he is and they're struggling again, you got to think he's going to be someone that they're going to try and move. And then at that point, the last 20 games, you could see both of them in the lineup if they struggle. I hope he's gone and I hope they don't struggle. But that's, you know, I'm trying to be a realist.
I think my ideal scenario would be to have TJ Brody come up, you know, play in a fifth, sixth defenseman type role, have him sheltered, get him some power play time. You know, one of the areas you can really leverage young offensive defensemen is the offensive numbers. That's what the Flames did with Dion Phaneuf in his first 3 years. So, and then put Erickson, you know, in the AHL, at least to acclimate himself to this sort of hockey, see how he does there. And then, I mean, if he's knocking the ball out of the park, then you can have the luxury of bringing him up. But if he isn't, you know, he can find his legs there, and you can develop Brody on the big team with easy minutes.
Yeah, basically the Geo role from a couple of seasons back, where he played a lot of fifth defense, and they kind of, you know, and obviously, you know, he was a guy that really took off in that spot. But that's maybe the spot that if you've got a skilled defenseman, fifth D, you know, third pairing minutes at evens and second pairing power play, that's where you can give someone some work and not expose them to too much danger. And Brent's obviously comfortable doing that because he sheltered crappier players than those guys by the looks of it this year. If you look at the way the Flames bottom 3-4 defensemen were used, right? Like Stajos, Mickelson, Party, Babchuk. He was perfectly content to give those guys the high ground and easy opponents. He did it with Backlund as a young forward. He's kind of got that part figured out. So, you know, I think I'd have a reasonable trust in him not wanting to lose his job by overplaying a guy too soon.
And I think the entry-level contracting with Eriksson being in Sweden, not burning that, is really giving the Flames some help with that. Because if he had been playing in the AHL this year, you have a situation where Brody and Eriksson's UFAs or RFA contracts, their first ones, are expiring the exact same time, 2 or 3 years down the road. And depending on their play, that's going to be a strain on the cap, but gives the Flames some room, I guess, that way. But
the only only other thing I'd add is that I hope Max Reinhardt scores a million goals starting this week.
That sounds good to me.
I watched actually the second half of the game against Medicine Hat, and it was just, you know, he played really well, but it's also one of those nights where someone had waved the magic wand over him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he's
played
well.
I've watched him play. I've watched a lot of those games, obviously, for those of us with Shaw, that's an option. And he's playing really well. He's been an excellent player, and it's not like his point total is inflated just because that happens, right? Sometimes guys get on runs, but his play has been really strong. And I think that's got to be something that, you know, kudos to whoever dug him
saw
up.
Saw that,
Yeah, well, or, you know, maybe they didn't, because I'll tell you the truth. I suspected if people had perceived him being what he's been this year and what he's turned out to be in the playoffs, he probably doesn't make it to 63.
No, mm-hmm. Not even close.
No. One question for anyone who's watched him. Has he been playing with Cody Eakin since he came over?
No, Eakin's been the top line guy. Reinhardt has been the second. Has been the second line guy with even like just terrible line mates. Like Eakin's line mates are bad enough. Kevin King, a guy I played hockey with in Bonavista, isn't exactly an elite offensive threat, and he's on the top line right now with Eakin. So Reinhardt is doing a lot with not very much right now.
Sorry, okay, Justin, the other guy that Eakin's playing with is Matt Fraser, who's their other top scorer. So those two guys are playing together.
Okay.
And no, Reinhardt's playing with some pretty middling WHLers, and he's productive. Now, the one thing is, though, he plays the point in the power play for them in their first on their first unit. So he's getting some burn in that. But no, he's at even strength. He's not getting much. And I know in the Saskatoon series, his line was out against Shens quite a bit. And in the Medicine Hat series, he played his fair share against Emerson Edom. So he's not, you know, they're not hiding him. He's getting his share of decent matchups, and he's not out there with Eakin or someone of that, or, you know, a Niederreiter or someone of that level. He's doing a lot of stuff. You know, they're playing well as a team. Their defense has played really
well. That's good.
And I did actually watch that game last week on Shaw, Robert, and Kent, you said that the magic wand waved over him. He actually hit two posts in that game too. So probably could have easily had seven goals.
But I think he also had a puck go through a guy, and it was sitting behind the goalie.
That is a very good point. Yes.
Just one of those nights.
Yeah.
But he's playing well. Okay. I've seen enough. He's playing well. And we'll see him more. Obviously, I think they start Friday against Portland, and Portland's got a pretty loaded group of forwards, probably as good as Saskatoon's. So if they shut them down, he keeps playing well against guys like Niederreiter and what's the other kid there? He's going to get drafted. Sven Bartschi or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Bartschi, I think.
Yeah,
so they've
right,
got
yeah.
a pretty loaded group of forwards, at least as good as Saskatoon's were. So if he goes out there and kills it again, then, you know, maybe there's something going on there.
Well, let's all cross our fingers for little Maxwell. Hopefully it develops into a NHL player someday. But I think that's it for this week. You can find Robert on Twitter at RMCleave, Kent on Twitter at Kent_Wilson, both of them at flamesnation.ca, Haley on Twitter at MG_Haley, matchsticksandgasoline.com, and I'm on Twitter at AzavitoJ. And just to note, this will probably be the last episode of Matchsticks and Microphones for the next while. I just want to thank Haley and Eric for giving us a place to host on the site. Thank all the guests that came on this year. Probably too many for me to remember / mention. And thanks to you for listening along these past 14 or so weeks. I've enjoyed hosting and editing this thing, and hopefully you've enjoyed listening to it. Keep an eye on the set, as we will have some special episodes from time to time. But for now, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon.